Hi, everyone. Super nice to be here. We'll talk a bit more about the context in which we work later. I'll start with some basic. My name is Marie. We've already been introduced. And today we are here to talk about funding for free and open source software. We'll start with this one because everyone expects it. It's been in literally every talk about funding open source in the last years. We're talking about a little bit of a different angle. This XKCD comic is mostly used to talk about infrastructure maintenance, and there's been a lot of focus on funding more maintenance, more infrastructures in the field in the last year, in the last few years, actually. And this is very good. We're not here to say it's a bad idea to do that, not at all. It's a very logical step because funders, usually not at our level, we're like the people who are in touch with the projects we fund, but like at higher levels, like ministries, foundations, these kinds of institutions, they want to fund shiny things. They want to fund something new each time they fund something. And so they can say, this thing I funded, I'm the reason as a funder why this project exists. And maintenance, it's already there. You're just putting more money on it. It's not as interesting for funder. And in the last years, there has been a lot of push for more of that sustainable funding that is infrastructure funding. You probably know about the Sovereign Tech Fund that was founded in Germany a few years ago that is now called the Sovereign Tech Agency. Maybe you've heard about Omidyar, which is a big funder that has been producing reports about roads and bridges, kind of funding infrastructure in the background of technology projects. The Open Technology Fund now has also infrastructure funding. This is essential. We need more of this. There are no questions about that. But today, we're here to talk about the small projects, because when we always talk about funding maintenance and infrastructure, we end up forgetting about this type of funding. And because this is really important, it should be pursued, but there has also been some criticism about it in the past years, which was very legitimate. We need to see about how we can do this better. First, we want to talk to you about why this matters and why this is important. And my colleague Marilena will start with that.
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons why it's important to fund small projects and innovative ideas. And the first reason is, of course, because every project starts small. Someone someday said, I have an idea, I need an open source ticketing platform, because we don't have that yet. And today you all booked your merch and your tickets for Congress over Pretix, which was funded by us. Someone else said someday we need a period tracking app that doesn't misuse people's data, and so they built that. Someday someone said Sea-Watch needs software to coordinate because their case is a specific use case where they require a certain tool. And these projects only exist because people had these ideas and got financial support to fund them. Another reason is because we want the free and open source software field to be as more diverse, and we want people from different backgrounds to be in the field and be able to work on their own ideas. And starting a project requires certain resources. It's mostly time to work on the project, but it's also often a network, people who can support you, specifically for specific tasks or to bring additional knowledge into the project. Or also a way to cover expenses like funding servers that come with the project. And people who come from a more privileged background often have these kind of networks already and have people who can help them have financial means to cover their expenses and sometimes even the ability to just work on a project for 6 months because they can live off their savings, but not everyone does.
We're not here to do a big capitalism critic, and we assume you all know why open source matters and why it's good that it exists. So if you assume that we have this business world already very active, we think that next to that, there is civil society where there's a lot of expertise. I mean, most of us here are from civil society and working on our own projects. And companies, they have capacities to invest in research and development, all that stuff. but there is no money other than funding to help people who have ideas outside of these companies. And these people have a lot of expertise. They acquire knowledge in niches that are not specifically related to the companies. They volunteer and they notice what's necessary for their volunteering. Maybe they have specific needs themselves. Maybe they know people who have specific needs and they know what's needed. They don't come and say, hello, I have a business model or I'm looking for one and I'm going to create something totally artificial. Because I'm looking for a new business, so I'm going to see if people maybe need an AI list tool that also does your shopping for you or whatever. They actually know what's needed on the ground. For example, that's a cancer patient who knows what an app would actually help them track their symptoms and not something that is telling you, hello, meditate, and you'll feel better and do some yoga. Or we are currently funding someone who teaches German to migrants, and he knows what tool would help them. And that's not Duolingo. That's something to learn how to trace Latin characters on a tablet to be able to write our language. Or to get back to the Sea-Watch example, nobody knows what people need on these boats except for the people who are on the boats. It's so specific, there is no way a business can just come and create the software they need. Also, they are often the first ones who know what kind of tools are needed. Thinking in a 2020 pandemic, we had this whole blockchain hype, but what people actually needed, what people actually wanted to create were tools to connect with people in simple ways, in interactive ways. Think video conferencing tools. Think video conferencing tools that reproduce the atmosphere in a bar, that if you move to someone, it gets louder. If you like go to another group, you hear other people. That kind of stuff was what people actually wanted, and what big funding institutions wanted to do was blockchain, web three type things. Don't even know much about that, to be honest, because that's very far from the needs of what people we work with have. And people also wanted to work remotely. So what we needed was actually more something like Nextcloud to help us work from home without having to risk our lives going to the office. Another point that is our last reason why funding new ideas, funding ideas from civil society is important, is alternative to tech giants and proprietary software. We've actually thought about this, but we've decided not to explain you why, because this, at this point, telling you why tech giants are shit at Congress is just extremely boring.
Now that we got over why this type of funding is important, and before we get into our suggestions on how to fund small early stage projects in a better and more sustainable way, we want to give you a bit of context of where we come from and what we have learned about these things. As was already said in the introduction, we both work at the Prototype Fund, a German free and open source fund, which is a project by the Open Knowledge Foundation Germany and which is funded by the Ministry of Education and Research in Germany. And in a nutshell, we have funding experience over 8 years. We had 16 rounds of funding, which were over a period of 6 months each. And on average, we funded 25 projects per round. We are now in the 16th funding round, which is the last one with the current model we have. And until now, the projects got €47,500 maximum per project. We have in total funded 387 projects, which equals about €16.6 million funding, which will have been granted by the end of this 16th funding round in the end of February 2025. And in total, for all of those 16 funding rounds, we have received over 4,000 applications and we have read them all.
The applause goes to the projects. Like I always say, if we hadn't, we wouldn't have the projects, we'd be five idiots with a lot of money and doing nothing. So that applause goes to them. And some of them are here today. So the focus, and we're talking about Prototype Fund until now, because we'll get into this later, but there are changes. But until now, what we funded was four areas, as we call them. The first is civic tech, think anything that is like somehow based on democracy, using data, empowering citizens, that kind of stuff. We always see them very broadly, so people made fit a whole bunch of ideas in civic tech because it was the broadest one. With data literacy, we're thinking about education projects that help people understand the internet, how tech works, how to get information out of data. With infrastructure, we think very, very wide. We don't think about that little XKCD with that one project that supports the internet. We're thinking infrastructure for society in general, so also think Nextcloud, that kind of stuff. It's the infrastructure that we as citizens, as organizations need, but also that kind of very deep infrastructure. We've done anything from user-facing apps, Nextcloud type, to Linux kernel encryption stuff, the whole bandwidth. And the last one is software security, which I don't need to explain because it's that clear.
Yeah, the idea of Prototype Fund is to have a lightweight funding structure that allows a maximum of people to participate and to get funded. We fund people or very small teams, no institutions or companies. And we try to achieve that by, for example, a very short application form with only 14 questions, by support with admin staff with the ministry, for example, setting up the GBR that is needed for a team to participate, or to by having very little reporting during the funding period.
This is a bit funding nerdy because there are also funding nerds. There are not as many as other kind of nerds. What we do is what we call hands-on funding. There are funders that say, here's a pile of money. You have to write a very long report at the end. What you do in the meantime is your problem, but you'll have to make it right by the end. What we do is very hands-on funding. That means that while we have very little formal application, formal admin to make everything very lightweight on the admin side, we have a lot of formats in which we talk to people we fund. We see how we can support them. We're closely in touch all the time. We offer a platform, a chat platform, to communicate with them every day. They don't have to write every day, but we're here every day. We do little updates every 2 weeks, just to a few sentences per email to know how the project's going, to be sure they're on track, to see if they need help. We do one-on-one calls. We do. We offer a lot of coachings. We offer special structures for coachings that may be relevant for one project, like doing a coaching on how to start a business is not relevant to most of the projects, but for some of them it can be very important. We do office hours where they can ask questions about design, that kind of stuff. We try to offer a lot and to have a lot of communication. We also know that a lot of people are doing a project alone for the first time in their life. That's not the case for everyone, but they sometimes, it's students who have been writing their master's thesis or even their bachelor's thesis about topic and then want to go into realizing that idea, and they've never worked alone, they've never done something like that, and they just need feedback. They need to keep up, to make sure they stay on track. They need people to be there for them, because 6 months alone on a project can be very scary and very lonely to some people. Also, we want them to get to know each other if that's relevant to them, because we have a lot of projects that either use similar technologies or projects that have similar topics, and we always try to connect them with each other.
Besides this, the focus is on giving people as much space as possible to experiment. We want to give them the opportunity to just try something out, even if it doesn't work out. So, for example, our payments are not milestone-based. You get the money at a regular interval based on the hours you worked and not on the progress you made. So if there's anything going wrong or some milestone needs more time, that's totally okay. And you can work on that more than originally planned without getting in financial trouble. We also encourage the projects to change the planned milestones if that makes sense. So if they get, for example, user feedback on their initial idea, or they encounter some issues during the explorative work.
And a last thing about us that's really important to us is that we see ourselves as a learning program. That means we didn't come on day one and say, this is the structure, it works for everyone, please everyone adapt. We are a research program, which means we are constantly researching things like trends in free and open source software, but also how to fund fast communities. And we edit the program constantly. Like, each funding round is a bit different from the last one because we try to cater to the needs of the people we fund instead of asking them to adapt to the structures we have. And we do this based on the feedback we get in research and in this lot of communication we have with them.
To just give you a short glimpse of some of the projects we have funded in the past years, this is the Drip period tracking app. It's a period tracking app that has a strong focus on data security and doesn't sell or misuse users' data. So if you're using this type of app or are looking for one, want to try it out, one, we strongly recommend Drip, and we are also using it by ourselves.
The second example I brought, I already mentioned it, is we have funded a few Nextcloud apps. This one is called Nextcloud Collectives. It's a knowledge base app in Nextcloud. If you have a Nextcloud, you can install various apps to do different things. And one of them is to have this kind of markdown-based wiki/knowledge base internal to your Nextcloud. The interesting thing about them is that they came from a very left activist background. They really thought it for activist communities, and it turned out the tool was so relevant to Nextcloud for also business cases where companies needed this internally that it ended up helping everyone, and the people were hired by Nextcloud to continue working on their app afterwards so it could keep going on.
Another example from our current funding round is Open Train Ticketing. It's a train ticketing software for smaller railways or heritage railways. And maybe if you've already met them here, they were at Karlsbahn. And it's a nice story because they actually got the idea from a FOSDEM talk last year where someone talked about the need of such a train ticketing software in open source, which doesn't exist yet. And they just decided to get started and send in an application, and it worked.
And the last project we brought is a security project. It's called OpenMLS. It's basically the open source implementation of the standard messaging layer security. It's about encrypted messaging that solves some of the issues currently known and in widely used messengers, among others, federation or encryption in large groups. And maybe you've seen their talk last year at Congress, otherwise Mediasys CDE. They explained the idea.
As we said, it were about 400 projects, and there are so many more cool projects we want to talk about but don't have the time now. But if you're interested, we have a database on our website, prototypefund.de, where you can all check them out, get the links, look into the repositories.
So it's easy to pick a few successful projects. We funded almost 400 of them, and of course we always pick the ones that still exist. I already mentioned that there is criticism about funding innovation, and that criticism is valid. We should not be producing software graveyards. This is something funders tend to do because they think new shiny ideas, this is going to be the good one, this is going to work, yay, let's do it. And again, there is no plan on how to continue the project, how to keep it alive. We're very aware of that. What we do is distributing tax money. We should be careful with that. We don't want our taxes to be misused and just thrown on stuff that is like just going to live on GitHub and not be updated ever again. But before going into how we can make it better and how we should make it better, I'd like to say maybe it's also not a drama if all projects don't exist after funding. It's something I only realized after funding for a few years. It's important to give a chance to people, and that means we're not going to fund always the rock stars that have established projects, because then there is no diversity, then there are no new people in this community, and it's okay to take a chance on a person and to give them this space to explore. And maybe the project doesn't survive, but the person has learned and will bring that knowledge into another project. Maybe some of the code gets recycled in some other project, in some new project. We also have projects that seem to be dead, but actually someone started an organization based on that code, and it's been like refactored for years, and it's kind of been disappearing in the internet at this point, but the project is successful, it's changed names, it's changed team, it's changed everything, but that was the start of something that is bigger now. So we don't really care about like the project still being there and that one GitHub repo still being updated years after that. And there is something also about funding people and not only projects. And there is this question that people love asking us. We're funded by the Ministry for Education and Research, which is currently an FDP ministry. And we have been talking a lot about businesses, and we have come up with our favorite answer to how many businesses were created out of Prototype Fund, which is there is not one way of being successful with open source. There are many, and here's a list of all successes that are not businesses only.
All that said, as I already said, our funding expired. It's currently the last round, which will end in February 2025. And we knew it was time to change some things about how we fund. We've learned a lot in the past 8 years, and we didn't feel like it would be a good idea to just say, let's keep doing the same, it worked, and do such a kind of proposal to the ministry that funds us. So we talked to other funders, we talked to alumni, we talked to people in the community around us, and we were able to launch a new and more grown-up and hopefully more sustainable Prototype Fund version. And the reason we're here talking about this is that we believe that these learnings are not only valid for us, but actually for everyone who's interested in funding or setting up a fund. And we want to tell you this is what we want to start doing differently based on our 8 years of experience in funding FOSS. And one part is, and that is not only true for Prototype Fund, but for many other funds, is that it is explicitly a fund that, like many, is focused on funding hours worked on writing code. Many funds are set up like this, but a software project is always more than code. It's communicating about the project, it's designing an interface, being at events like this, building users or contributor communities, talking to people who work on related projects, documenting the code. And funders need to take this into account and not only think about writing code, but not only implicitly, but intentionally set time aside as an incentive to get the work that is not code also done. And because it's extremely rare, if not impossible, that one single person has all these skills to do all that stuff except writing code, we need to fund teams, including team members who don't write code, who maybe are project managers, who are designers, who are experts in various fields. For example, if we're talking about the cancer app, someone who's a medical expert. And those people are as important to the project as the people who write code, and they deserve to be considered and paid. And something that may be basic but not always easy to take into account is that software communities don't stop at borders. So this is particularly complicated because funds are often only available for specific geographic reasons. For example, in Germany, bound by the government or by regional private funders. And that doesn't often work for the teams behind the free and open source projects because they may be international based. And funding only a part of the team creates actually an imbalance in the team, as the funded people have more time available, more money available than the rest of the team, who are maybe based in another region, and which prevents projects from running smoothly. And while some people that are funded already have a wide network, are part of communities that can help them, many others, as Marie already said, are only starting out. They are, especially in funds like ours, who are funded funding innovation, they are just getting started in the field. They maybe not have the network or the expertise, and providing only money to them works only for the people who already have this kind of knowledge and connections. So offering coaching, offering opportunities to talk to experts or connections to existing communities can make a huge difference for a project just starting out.
When we ask people what should we offer on top, what should we offer, they always say more time. Just more time, nothing else. And we don't think time can solve everything. The other points are mostly underestimated by people who say, just give me more time, I don't need all the skills, I don't need other people, I don't need coaching, I don't need help. I just need more time to figure it out on my own. That's a very nerdy thing to do. And we don't think it's like the answer to everything, but there is something to it because our funding structures are quite short. Like a lot of lightweight funds, we offer 6 months of funding. And in a context where there is nothing that will give you money after such a funding, because now we have these maintenance funds, we also have innovation funds, but we have nothing just after innovation fund. I have a prototype and want to make it work, make it be used fund. That doesn't exist because it's the thing that is the least rewarding thing for funders to fund because it's just some in-between stage. So in that context, like even adding a few months to your funding, if you can, makes a big difference. It can go make the project go from very prototype-y to kind of usable. And in the spirit of more than code, which Marilena just said, this can also be this time can also be invested in more than code things, like we've discussed. And in the end, maybe the most important thing to me is planning, long-term planning. That means like giving the time to plan, but also encouraging people you fund to plan early. What we have is that we have people who think, yay, I have 6 months of money, I'm going to build my thing. And at the end of the 6 months, 2 weeks after, before the end of funding, they're like, what do I do now? I don't have money anymore. Guess I have to find a job and I'll do this project as a hobby next to it, maybe, if I have time. That's the classic mistake. So supporting us is also encouraging people who get funding to think on day one how it moves on after month six. It doesn't need to be setting up a business. I've just said it. We don't think business is the only way to do success. At Prototype Fund, we help you find ways to set up a business if that's what you want, if it fits your project. We mentioned Pretix before. That's a good example of an open source project that is also a business. But we've also, like the Sea-Watch example, for example, is something that's never going to have a business, and we need to find ways that fit each different fund. And the last one is, like, we've talked a lot about we do it like this, we do it like this, we do this, and then there are calls. But like a super important thing where we funders need to be very self-critical is that we like to set up structures and we like to say this is how it's going to work and this is going to help you. But as much as structures can be helpful, they are a frame in which the person who is funded can develop and learn. We need to not forget that people we fund have been chosen from huge pools of people who have applied because they are experts, because they are really good and they know what they're doing. And funders tend to be like, yeah, I want this to go in this direction, I want this to go in this direction, I'd like to have this type of project. But being open to what the people we fund want to do and being open to feedback on how we fund is extremely important as a funder. That is, for me, what makes the difference between a good funder and a funder that is actually not really helping in the long run. We need to adapt structures as much as possible to people and not the country.
So we don't think we've got it all figured out yet, and there's many ways to build helpful funding structures, and this is just our learnings. But if you're interested in how we've set up our fund for the next 4 years, based on all these learnings we just told you about, you can just take a look at our website, where we explain our new structures, where we're currently setting up for Prototype Fund. You can find that under new.prototypefund.de. And if you actually have a good idea that you think fits our fund, you can also still apply. Our application deadline is January 2nd, 2025, so that's very soon. But our application process is still very lightweight, so don't be afraid, just submit last-minute application. You will not be the only person to do that. And otherwise, if that's too short notice for you, the next opportunity will be in the fall of 2025 to apply for funding, and we will have one application round each year.
For the records, our application phase lasts 2 months, and we get more than 50% of applications on the last day, so it's actually doable. One last thing, we're almost at the end of our time. We're always happy to talk about Prototype Fund and make the funding program and our grantees more known and use it as an example. But a thing we're particularly happy about is when we see more funds emerge. We don't want to be the prototype fund that does cool things. We want to be one small fund part of a huge network of lightweight funds, of funds that are supporting people in different communities, in different countries, in different areas, in different ways also, because there is not only one way that fits everyone to fund. Several funds have been built on the prototype fund model or have been inspired by it. There was a fund in Taiwan, there is a prototype fund in Switzerland, there is a prototype fund hardware. We can't cover all needs, and it's always good if there is more money for free and open source software. So if you know ways a prototype fund or something similar could be set up in your country, in your community, if you have contacts, if you're working on something, we're super happy to help. We've been failing, trying for 8 years at this point, and we're happy to share everything. And we will also be happy to share resources and that kind of stuff that we have built, because it costs a lot of work to make that, and we can share that. Of course, we need big funds, like Sovereign Tech Agency. We need OTF to exist because we cannot pick up the big projects that need a lot of money. We can't do very long funding times. We can't do very large amounts of money. We can't fund companies, these kind of things. But we also need to remember that a fund should never be a single point of failure, because that's dangerous. I don't know if you know what happened in the US when the Trump administration closed down OTF, but there was a lot of projects left in trouble with no money. Right now in Europe, the EU is threatening to drop the NGI fund, or at least make it much smaller and different. And that means that the NLNet fund, that you may know, is also in great danger at this point. And we can't have only very few funds that are big, and that, then when they fail, we have whole open source communities left with no money. So setting up redundant structures and not having a single point of failure as a fund is very, very important to our communities. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Give a big round of applause for Marie and Marilena. We still have 8 minutes for questions. Do we have any questions in the audience? Yes, we do. We also have a signal angel on duty in case there are questions from the internet.
Thank you. Very good talk, thanks. So we're still in a pickle with the continuation of projects. You mentioned it and it was very well, but do you see something that would allow us, maybe mid-term, long-term, to fund operations, maintenance of existing software, and not just nascent project like blossoming stuff? So do you have some ideas about that? Thank you.
I think there is definitely a trend in funding communities about talking about that, about how it's important. The problem is convincing the people who have money, because funders like us, we don't have the money. There are like institutions above us. And I think it's going to take probably years and a lot of work. We've seen it with the Sovereign Tech Agency in Germany. That was really a lot of work. The people who did it were actually people from Team Prototype Fund at the time. And it's going to be community efforts of convincing people, of constantly working on doing it, on working with people in policy, of working with people in foundations to convince them. There is no short-term solution for that. But there is definitely an awareness for it in funding communities. And I really hope it's going to keep going on and we're going to have more of that. Right now, what we have is maintenance funds for very large projects or very sensitive projects, and we're going to have to find ways to maintain also the smaller projects. We know that.
We have another question.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much for the talk. If I consider you being a startup funding type with morals, then still, do you have KPIs for success? I mean, it doesn't have to be return on investment, as you said, but you surely should need some KPIs on success. And what are your relations with universities?
I want to print that on a sticker, a startup fund with morals. It sounds fun. We don't have KPIs as such. People submit milestones and what they think they're going to achieve in the 6 months. but our money is research money, so technically they're paid to research if it is possible to build what they think in the way they think and do explorative work for 6 months. So what they get is payment by the hour worked on this explorative work. Mostly they manage to reach their milestones, but there is no pressure on whether if it doesn't work. That's the way this fund is set up, and it's very important that we have some of those. We need like also the startup funds, but we need some of these funds for people to like figure out if things are actually possible, because we have quite innovative things sometimes. Your question had a second part. The universities. So we don't work directly with universities, because our setup is that we are not allowed to fund institutions. We fund private people, but we do have people from universities apply to us, but they do it as private people. We've had university teachers submitting learning software. We had people writing PhDs and doing the tech part and then writing papers about in the context of their university again. But it's all very informal because we have no structures to work with a university.
Thank you. We have another question.
Congratulations and good work. I just have one question. Will the new prototype fund be open to non-residents in Germany? I don't know if I can get an Anmeldung till the second, just to know.
It's a bit complicated. We've tried to make it EU-wide, and it's kind of EU-wide with some small print. So if you're alone, you need to be in Germany. If you're a team, one person in Germany is enough, and the other people can be in Europe. So if you are working with someone in Germany and you're based in another European country, you will have to form a lightweight form of company that is called GBR only after you're accepted. Don't do that before January 2nd. And the GBR will be based in Germany, and that's how it works, that then people can be in other EU countries.
We have time for one more.
Hi. So my question would be that there's another fund called Sovereign Tech Fund, right, that supports open source projects. And here you are, let's say, helping to create new open source projects. So have you thought about aligning both of, like, are the actions somehow aligned that if some project starts here, then it can continue to be active under the other fund, and this entire community can grow? Are you talking, people talking among each other, or are there any plans on that line?
I'm not sure I understood you, but you mean if funders try to send projects to each other so they continue?
If I started a project and it would need to grow, it's not just one guy, there's like some community traction, people are starting to invest time on it, but then it would need again money to continue it, and funds like Sovereign Fund can help that. It already helps certain open source projects. So have you thought about going on that line somehow, if somebody doesn't need to start a startup, but it's a project that can help the community, some compilers, something else, right? Then it can then go over to the Sovereign Tech Fund and get continued.
So we know the people from Sovereign Tech Agency. They're actually our ex-colleagues. The Team Prototype Fund split in two. Part of it is Sovereign Tech Agency now. And we do send people to them when it's appropriate, but they fund quite different type of projects than ours, much bigger projects. We do try to send projects to other funders when it works. We also don't do only projects that are businesses, so we also do community projects, and there is generally an informal exchange between funders about projects and about how to fund and who does what. But there are no formal structures for that.
Thank you very much. That's all we have time for. Can we have one more round of applause for the speakers? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.